You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of October 21st, 2020, and there is no escape. And that's just fine. Sing of Zacharias songs, Slayer of Hydras, first of his name. Born of Zeus as a serpent, in spite of Queen Hera, Zacharias came.
Back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Chester.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a series about a humorous conversation about video games. We're back in hell.
We're back.
Couldn't escape.
Yeah. Which level do you think you'd find yourself at? I mean, we all want to say we'd find ourselves in Elysium. We're talking about Hades, by the way.
That is, correct me if I'm wrong, Elysium is where people who have achieved some kind of like victory or like legacy reside, right? The heroes. Yeah. I'm not there. I don't think I'm there.
But I mean, you know, what is required to get into Elysium? I mean, you've probably won a game of PUBG before.
That's true. I did have one game of PUBG. I think I probably got carried though. Does that count?
Well, I mean, you know, it just depends on how good of a mood Hades is in when you reach the desk.
My guess is there's probably multiple tiers in Elysium, you know, and I'm probably in the like the townhouse, like not in the nice houses, you know.
Okay,
you can lower just, level yeah. Elysium.
It's an up and coming neighborhood of Elysium.
Yes, exactly. I'm on the part of Elysium that's built on like garbage that's floated down the river Styx, but is not earthquake safe, you know.
Better than lava though, so it's fine.
We are talking again about Hades this week. Scott and I both finished the game. I think we talked about it quite a bit, actually, in the first impressions sort of debrief that we did, I think, a couple weeks back. Yes. We wanted to revisit that because there was, as we predicted, a lot more game to this game. In fact, there probably still is a lot more game to this game. And also figured we'd talk a little bit about the story as well, and maybe a little bit more, now that we finished it, about how it sort of ranks and why within our quote-unquote pantheon of Supergiant's games. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Side note, I was playing a game of Among Us the other day, and one of the folks that I was playing with, we started talking about Hades, and he said, I don't like Supergiant game mechanics.
Yikes.
And so I murdered him in Among Us and threw him out the airlock.
I mean, clearly, that's the only recourse.
I was like, oh my gosh, really? Come on. We can't be friends now. Who are you?
So was it was there any rationale behind it? Because I am morbidly curious about people that would not like this game.
I mean, I think at that point, it's not even a question of why. It's just this. He's just clearly into, I don't know, like farm simulators or something.
Yeah,
that has
you're just
to be
so
it,
far
right?
off. Yeah,
right. Okay. It must, because to me, this feels like if you say you don't like Supergiant games, that means you don't like turn-based games, rich RPGs, or beat-em-ups.
Right.
You know, so like there's something is off, right?
You don't, so then what? Yeah,
you must like some sort of subgenre of like dating sim, maybe, like that is your game of choice, which is, you know, more power to you. It's not for everybody, but you know, go get it.
Ugh, weird. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I have the unique opportunity to be playing this game a lot, but at very strange times. So I've done many different runs through this game.
Yes.
And have seen quite a bit, you know, finished it with, you know, all the different weapons and such. And I'm like fully into the like modified run section at this point. Where are you at with it?
So I am the same. I think I've completed the game 4 times after the final credits.
Okay.
I mostly stuck with the same weapon combination. So I'm going to talk about what I think is the most busted build. Okay. In Hades, and I'll see what you think, because I'm curious to know if you've tried this build, or if not, what you think the most busted build is.
Okay.
So, the strongest build that I have played thus far is the shield, using the aspect of chaos.
Aspect of Chaos.
So is that the one? This is the one where when you hold your Bull Rush ability, your charge, or your block, when you let go, your next special will send out multiple special hits.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've maxed that out. So every time I do that, I launch five of those, right?
Oh, wow, that's a good
one. And then I specifically try to get the Ares ability that puts Doom on my special usage.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically just spam the shit out of that. Like, I go into shield stance, wait for someone to hit me, zoom past them, turn around, and slam them with five shields, all marking them for Doom.
Right.
Ideally, I get the hangover when I dash.
Mm-hmm.
Dodge doing deflection. Mm-hmm. But that, essentially that combination of Doom on special and investing in those areas, I've gotten up at this point to like level 8 in the Doom damage.
Oh,
with
wow.
Increased Doom damage at a later tick. As well as like all kind of add-ons. In fact, I genuinely felt the absolute strongest during the final run where you don't fight Hades. And I was so bummed. I was like, oh, this is so anticlimactic. I was like, I'm fucking ready. This is it. Number 10, baby. Here we go. Could not believe that. I was so mad.
That's cool. I mean, I completely see it. I never invested very heavily into the shield. So that like I have... You know, when I was using the Chaos aspect, I think I only had like, I don't know, one or two extra projectiles or something. Like it wasn't crazy like that. But if you start to stack those status effects on it, then you can just mark a bunch of people. You know, you could really crowd control very easily instead of having to like, you know, dash around or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say, I am genuinely surprised by how much fun the different augmentations of the weapons are, which we touched a little bit on this during our last debrief, but I really hadn't unlocked a whole lot of extra weapons, but a lot of them are quite different. They really do change how you play. Really incentivize you rethinking the mirror augmentations that you have, because, you know, you need to think about, like we were talking about last week, the boons that this provides you, but also the weaknesses. So, using the arrow, for example, where you have the aspect where the special single targets one person, very strong. I had two clears with that weapon, but I found myself constantly challenged by rooms full of bad guys because you lose the ability to basically do AoE clearing. So I had to start thinking about, okay, well, now I need to dash more. So then I really want to use the boon charm that gets me Dionysus so that it can poison people and basically run away and have like a protected run. So I can melt bosses, but then have a protected run, you know, by dashing a lot. So there's just all this like second level of thinking that is changed while you're trying out a different version of the weapon that you already have. And then on top of that, I think the charms that let you increase the odds of getting they guarantee that you get a boon from that particular god.
Yeah.
That's actually extremely helpful. And it really does let you have a runs where you feel as though you do have agency over the choices that you play. And I don't think I quite understood that when we were first having our discussion, because until you unlock those and you upgrade them to increase the extra chances of rarity, and you really start to get a feel for a weapon, to really feel like you know it, it really feels like you unlock the ability to chase that perfect build. And by the time that I did this Aspect of Chaos shield clear, like for the sixth or seventh time, I felt like this was my build. This is what I feel so confident and strong in. And I started adding heats. I started augmenting and making the game harder for myself, knowing that I could do these runs easy. Like there was just no... I needed to add that extra challenge to the game because I felt so confident in a game that, when you're first playing, it seems a little bit more chaotic, a little bit more random than I think it actually is.
I agree. The more you play it, the more you start to see you can't necessarily chart a straight line from A to B, but you can give yourself a pretty good arc at hitting that mark, which is a really satisfying thing because there is still a little bit of chance, but even within that chance, there's enough ability for you to audible and be like, okay, well, I'm not going to get this Dionysus thing early enough for it to make a difference. So I'm going to switch, you know, I'm going to, and you know, you can kind of hedge your bets a little bit, which I like quite a bit. The ones that I gravitate towards are, Dionysus, because the poison stuff is just crazy. Like, just stacking poison on people is extremely helpful.
Side note on the poison, I also didn't appreciate until recently how powerful the boon is that slows enemies down when they're poisoned. Because you really can just kite those motherfuckers all around a room.
Well, that's another one. That's why I often prioritize Demeter as well, because all of her ice shit slows people down.
Yeah.
And she also has, I don't know if you've ever used it, but she has the thing, it's called like Nature's Harvest or something like that, where it lowers all of your boons to standard level, but then every three rooms they evolve. And you can basically just like, this game, the more I play it, the more this game is like a case study in exponential growth, where like if you start to like, it's anything too, where I'm always using the ability that gives me an extra percentage of money based on my current total, because the first few levels, okay, it's not a huge amount, but like by the end you're getting like 200 gold or whatever every time you clear something. And then you can just buy the shit out of everything at the very last level.
Oh, like buy those diamonds that are 1,000 gold.
Yeah, exactly. Smart. And so the same thing happens with Demeter and a few others, where it's like it doesn't feel like a lot when you're doing it early, but if you get skilled enough, then you can kind of skill your way through it without the boons, and then all of a sudden the boons accelerate very quickly.
Yeah.
And by the end of the game, you're just rolling.
Yeah, and there's several boons that do that. There's a couple where, or not boons, charms, right?
Charms,
Persephone's charm that you get once you beat the game. Mm-hmm. I think it adds a random, it's basically a random pomegranate, a random upgrade to the level of one of your boons every time you clear six rooms.
Yep.
And the utility of that, especially in the end when you're going through like six of those rat-infested shitholes, is so strong. especially when it lands on those boons that you really find useful. I found it super interesting to do a run where one of the ways that you make it more difficult is by needing to sell one of your boons at the end of every world. But the benefit of that is that when you are having a pomegranate upgrade, you are more likely to hit a boon that you want. And so you can have smaller amount of boons, but more powerful boons when you stack that with Persephone's build, and really kind of just invest in the skills that you feel like are the crux of your build, and abandon the ones that are not at the center of that. And it is a different experience, but it feels like it's rewarding. And per your point, it's almost like a case study in why you should exercise when you're young.
Like
build good habits so that you're not, you know, an unhealthy loser like your host here.
It makes me annoyed. I was like, man, I should have been contributing to my 401k when I was 17. You know, it's like, because think of how much money I'd have now. And it's like, it's the same thing where like it just gets so powerful towards
I mean, if I had Persephone granting me a boon, you know what I mean, maybe I'd be further along.
I used on the keepsakes note, I used the pierced butterfly quite a bit. Like I started switching keepsakes mid run.
Is that the one that gives you like what, +1 damage every world clear or something?
And if you every time you clear a battle, it gives you, and like I've upgraded it such that it gives you 2% every time you clear an encounter without getting hit. And those early, you know, going through Tartarus, you know, it gets to be pretty easy where you can get through a lot of those rooms without being touched. And so you could exit Tartarus with like 15-20% extra damage just for free.
And so at which point, like, it doesn't even matter what weapon you're using, you're just melting.
Exactly. And then after I get out of Tartarus, I'm like, well, I'm probably not going to be able to get unhit through Asphodel, so now I'm going to switch my keepsake to a different thing. And then just go straight from there. But that lets me play basic, because I still a lot of times am doing the I forget what they call it, but whichever weapon gives you the bonus darkness, just kind of, it kind of keeps me from falling into a rut. And so
man, I fell into my rut and embraced it. The shield is just so good.
I mean, every time I think I found that, I come up with a different thing. Like I was playing with the spear and I unlocked a few of the weapon augments that, the Hephaestus hammer stuff. So one of them was it increases the range of the attack, and so the spear is like crazy, like it's like I don't know, like 3 or 4 enemies' lengths away, and you can still hit somebody. And so it's essentially a long range weapon. And then I got another weapon unlock that lets me attack faster, and so you can just keep jabbing. And then I got another one that stacks doom on them from Ares, and so I'm able to just like stand very far away from someone and just continue wailing on them every time, putting another doom on them.
Yeah, that's very satisfying.
It was. I mean, it's probably so annoying sitting next to me playing this, because I was playing it and I told Tom, I was like, oh, this is going to be a crazy run. And like, it was, because like, I was just melting through every boss, you know?
Yeah. I love the feeling that you can have mid-run where you just go, this is the build. Like, yeah. I got it. I unlocked it. Or I found the 2 boons that I know are the crux of this build, and now it's just riding the gravy train and seeing how I can augment it.
I haven't even unlocked all of the hidden aspects yet.
Yeah, me neither. Some of the final builds, I haven't unlocked for those guys as well. Side note, I was actually watching some people do speedruns, like people who are very good at the game. And you can see people do incredible speedruns with pretty much any weapon. My record is 25 minutes and 19 seconds. That's the fastest I've beaten the game.
That's pretty fast. But I wonder what mine is.
It feels fast. You can actually check in the archive.
Yeah, I got to look at that. I'm going to grab my Switch real quick.
Yeah. The world record is 7 minutes and 16 seconds.
7 minutes?
7 minutes. So just to give you a sense of how fast that is, there is a way to make the game harder. The first like notch up is you're forced to beat a world within 9 minutes.
Yes, I use that world. One quite a bit, because 9 minutes is very easy. And so it's like, oh, I can easily take some heat from this and not really be affected by it.
Yeah, totally. But 7 minutes and 16 seconds? Oh my God.
I was playing with a weapon that was pretty weak, and so I failed to do it. I was trying to beat every level in like...
Oh yeah, what happens?
7 minutes or something. You know, it was something more aggressive. Basically, it's like PUBG rules. Like, if you get to 0, your life starts ticking down.
Oh, so if you're in the final boss with Hades, you could still do it. You would just be dying.
Yeah, and that's what happened. I was in the very first world, and I was fighting Meg, and the time ran out. And then I was still fighting her, but I was getting -1 health like every second, basically.
Oh, that's hilarious. I like that quite a bit. One more mechanic thing I want to talk about before we maybe give our general thoughts about the story as well. But I did want to shout out the augmentation that changes the bosses. I stacked it up. The first time I did it, I just went straight to 3.
Oh, boy.
And it is no joke with some of those bosses. The first time you enter the room where you fight Meg and all 3 sisters are there waiting for you, I was just like, oh, my God, what have I done?
that's a good one. I haven't done it yet for because eventually you unlock the one that lets you do it for Hades, too, and I haven't done that yet.
Yes. Yeah, I have not done the Hades one. I did that one, and then I did the snake one as well. It was clearly augmented, which, again, is a wild fight because the landscape where you fight them is different. You're now sort of in a circular room. There's not really any safe space to sort of sit and chill. I think, to me, that is the best endgame content. I know that there's probably a lot more game to experience with that augmentation in particular. Yeah. I think other than that, it feels like I'm pretty much done, other than some of the side story stuff, which apparently I learned you could romance characters in this game. So that's new.
I mean, well, I guess we will, for whatever it's worth, you know, it'll get spoilerish at this, at this point in time. I mean, so I also just think that this game is very smart in terms of a roguelike, of keeping people coming back to it. I mean, realistically, how many people are actually going to play it through that many times? But every single time you finish a run successfully, it makes me want to just jump right back in. It's like, I want to see what the story is. I want to get back up to Persephone. I want to see like what Hades and Nyx are actually hiding, all of that. Like, I just think that's very smart writing in terms of how do you make a roguelike also a narrative game? And here it is. I feel like this is probably the best example that I've ever seen of that.
Agreed. I totally agree. The one complaint, though, is they try to add narrative during the levels by adding these potential encounters in each world where you meet mm-hmm. someone. What is it's the guy rolling the ball up a hill?
Yeah, Sisyphus.
Yeah, it's Sisyphus, and then like
and you know his Eurydice? His boulder is an actual named character, Boldy.
Oh no, that's very good. I like that a lot. I don't know how well that works because they are side characters and you can't progress their story well enough. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a little bit more meat on those bones. I think back to Bastion, where mm-hmm. the narrator will talk to you about the world that you're in as you go there.
Yeah.
You know, like when you are killing the buzzards or something, he will comment on, you know, the buzzards used to be nice and then they're, you know, the exactly. environmental collapse caused them to go rabid or something like that, right? There's live commentary as you're playing. This one you have to opt in. There are little tidbits about the world in each of the levels, but it's a small little glimmer of a light that you have to optionally click on when you're not in the heat of the battle. And usually my adrenaline is pumping. I'm not looking, or if I am looking, I'm looking for fishing holes, and then I just move on to the next room.
Yeah.
So I wish there was a little bit more effort to give you the story rather than having you have to opt into it, because I did find myself sort of blasting through the narrative when I'm in the room for Hades to get into the next run and then kind of forgetting about it. And I think that is that makes this, I think from a narrative perspective, probably their weakest in their set of four.
I'm trying to do some of the side stuff. Like I'm trying to figure out the Achilles and what's his name? Patroclus, maybe? I forget his mm-hmm. name.
The sad emo guy who's always in Elysium.
I'm trying to figure out a way to reunite them, because that feels like a side story that is doable. And I feel like the way to essentially do it is to just basically, you know, give them enough offerings to a point where they reveal something about how we can get them back together,
right?
I'm also there is stuff around the Orpheus and Eurydice thing that I definitely have not done yet in terms of like learning how to do the lute and, you know, getting them back together. I've unlocked the soundtrack thing and the stand and all that stuff, but like I haven't gotten them back together yet.
I mean, I think the problem with that is it's almost like the random boons, you know, like you have to hope that you encounter them.
Yeah.
And then when you do encounter them, you have to hope that they'll give you a piece of the storyline, right?
Yeah.
The first time I found the Pericles or whatever, when he mentioned Achilles, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I can't wait to talk to Achilles. Mm-hmm. I go back and Achilles' comment is something about my mom, and no comment that I had met this person that clearly has this connection with him. So I couldn't opt in there. And at that point, I have to... You know, because when you are interacting with these characters, you can only speak with them once and exhaust the dialogue. Yeah. You then have to go and beat the game again or get that far into Elysium where you can meet Pericles, talk to him again, and then go back and reset the conversation with Achilles. I don't think that is the most graceful way of opting into the narrative. And I think one of the solves of their way of getting about it is just adding a lot of characters. Like there's a lot of people that you can interact with. All of the gods... Death, Dusa, Meg, Nyx, you know, Eurydice. Like, there's a bunch of people that you're interacting with in the game to make it feel loaded with narrative.
Yeah.
But when you think about the individual lines, like an individual storyline, it is distributed very, very piecemeal. Even the main storyline, I think, is distributed very, very piecemeal. And I don't think I don't think it's especially satisfying.
Yeah. It's a weird line. I wonder... Yeah, I don't know. It's hard not to read into this too much, but it almost feels like the correction for what Pyre was, you know, because there's almost as much visual novel stuff in here as there was in Pyre. It's just that it is hidden 2 to 3 systems deep in a menu. And like to the point where some of the things I don't think get unlocked unless you are actively looking at the codex. So, you know, and if you don't want to do that, it's fine. It doesn't really impact the actual fighting in the game. It's just, do you care about the characters? Yes or no? And it just feels like they're trying to find the balance still of like, how do you integrate that stuff? And, you know, what sort of game are you trying to make when it comes to that?
Right. So real quick, let's talk about the overall story.
Yes.
Of like finding your mother, escaping hell. you know, you learn, Zagreus learns that Persephone is his mom, and then she left because she didn't want to create a war with Olympus, and in all actuality, she loves her dad, and at the end of the game, she reunites, and you're back in hell with both of your parents.
It's so crazy that this is a happy ending.
It is. I found it extremely anticlimactic, and kind of just, because this is fucking, this is the Parent Trap, you know? Like, it's, it is not, it does not feel like a genuine happy ending story should have occurred. Mm. And it's very strange to me that the answer is, oh, I found a picture of you in dad's room and you're going to come back now. Like, it feels like a fantasy story written by a kid in high school whose parents are getting a divorce, you know? Like, it doesn't actually feel like a mature story. And certainly not in the same vein as Transistor, you know?
Yeah.
That isn't a super, I mean, it's a happy-ish ending, but it is not, you know, not a triumphant victory by any means.
It's not same with Bastion. There's, people do not escape unscathed even in the happiest of endings in both of those.
Right. They're very ambiguous endings. And this was one where it defers the actual crisis for later and or not in the game. Right.
Well, that's what I mean. I am suspicious about what is still in the game, because at a certain point, even if, like, these post end game runs that I'm playing, you can tell the Olympians know something is up.
But are you gonna have a climactic battle between Zeus? Like, I don't see that in the game. I've never seen anyone hint at that. I mean, again, we have not invested hundreds of hours. Maybe it's in here, but. You know, we saw the credits roll. I feel like if they wanted to deliver a stronger epilogue or a larger conclusion to this story, they would have built it out in a way that would be more clear that thing is coming. And I don't get that sense.
I don't know.
At the stage in the game.
I don't know. But I mean, it definitely feels like, I mean, that happy ending does feel pretty tenuous in terms of, like, and they even say it, like, Zagreus even says it at the end, where, you know, this, we can't do this forever, you know, people like Zeus and his folks are gonna start getting suspicious, and immediately leaks start happening. Like, I was fighting one of the Furies, and they mentioned it. They're like, oh, so what's her face is back, and it's like, whoa, I didn't tell you that. And so, like, the news is gonna spread. Oh, and the other thing, who's the very fast god? Hermes.
Hermes, yeah.
Hermes immediately knows.
Speedy boy.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well,
news
that
travels
point,
fast, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he even makes a joke about that. And so he's like, well, when you're ready to spread it, know that I can do it fast. And it's like, oh, boy, like, this is just a matter of time until Zeus finds out. Yeah. Or, you know, even more scary, Demeter finds out, right? So I think there's just more there. I don't know what it is. If they're going to do maybe like it could be a visual novel ending, you know, it could be a whole like narrative one versus a gameplay one, but I still want to know.
Did you think that the conflict was like pretty well explained? Cause I still think in the drips and drops of how the narrative is revealed, the central conflict I thought was still a little bit unclear though, and not entirely. Yeah, it wasn't instantly compelling to me that this is the conflict, right? Like, oh, the gods just, they didn't want you to be there for one reason or another. It feels, I don't know. I mean, I know that Greek mythology is convoluted as it is, so maybe I should just take it at face value, but it felt like the gravitas of you fighting your way out of hell to see your mom was just sort of deflated by a conclusion where she's just like, all right, well, let me pack my bags, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're back home.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that I liked more was actually earlier on when you get to Greece, and maybe it doesn't even sink in the first time, but definitely by the second or third time, I'm thinking to myself, why is it frozen up here? You know, like there's something not right happening, you know? And it's funny because the characters themselves, Zag, like, he doesn't even really know. Like, he's never been to Greece. And
well, Demeter hints at it.
Well, that's why I liked it. And the other gods are like, a few of the other gods are like, oh, Demeter's really pissed. Like, hopefully, you know, like, she gets over this, but like, oh boy, it's going to be cold for a while. And it's like, oh, like, this is actually interesting. Like, there's a rogue god up there
and something is going wrong. And then once you start to learn a little bit more about her daughter and what happened, I feel like that Demeter and Zeus's story is more interesting than Persephone and Hades's story, because the Persephone and Hades story that I'm familiar with, and again, you know, Hanna was the religious studies major in the family, right? Like, I sure, know yeah. most of this through like Wikipedia and, you know, God of War. But
Thanks,
Persephone was abducted by Hades and then tricked by he offered her a pomegranate. Mm. And so that means that she left Hades, but she'd have to spend a quarter of the year down there in the underworld with him. And that's when winter would happen.
Right.
And they don't really go too far into that side of it. You know, Hades is a much more sympathetic character because,
besides, you know, being just like a shitty dad.
Yeah. I mean, he was a pissed off shitty dad, but then they kind of patch it up at the end. You know, I don't know if did you go through that sequence where they like have a heart to heart in the garden?
Oh no, I have not. No, not yet.
If you talk to Hades a few more times, he will talk about what happened. You know, he was in love with Persephone, and Zeus kind of understood that. And Zeus knew that Persephone wanted to leave, but, you know, he then had to make it so that Hades kind of abducted her versus her leaving on her own accord, because that would have caused discord in Olympus. And so there's a little bit more there. And I found it interesting, especially just seeing Zag and Hades try to figure out how to live together after the game ends. But they didn't play up the fact that Hades basically tricks Persephone into spending a quarter of the year with him, which was always the Persephone myth that I was familiar with. So who knows if that's incoming or if that is, or if that's going to, cause they make reference to Persephone has a plan. She's like, don't worry, Zag, I am thinking about a way to smooth it over with Olympus. And like, maybe that's where they're going to go with that, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if it's going to come in this game at all, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, maybe it's some other thing. Maybe it's, like, DLC down the road or something.
Yeah.
I think overall, I mean, just to sort of wrap up my final thoughts on Hades as a whole, I mean, I think this game is fantastic.
Yeah.
Unabashedly so. But I do still think it's not as strong by a long shot to either Transistor or Bastion. And I think I put a lot of that not on the gameplay, but on how the story is woven into the gameplay and what the story at the end of the day actually is about.
Yeah. I mean, I was listening to the Bastion soundtrack today as I was like out in the garage just to like think about that game, because that's how much I really love that game.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with you in terms of the lore. I think mechanically, I think this game is, in my opinion, this is my favorite game of theirs mechanically, just,
Over Bastion?
I think so, because it has the MOBA aspects that Transistor had.
Yeah.
You know, Bastion didn't have a lot of the, like, you know, think about all of the crazy, you know, status effects and cooldowns and like combos and stuff. Like, Bastion had some of that, but like not to this extent.
Yeah.
But this one has the feel of Bastion.
It is chock full, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. And also just the, like, there's just so much shit here. Like, there's more and more and more stuff to unlock, all those weapon aspects, all the upgrades of the aspects. I mean, it's just it's an insanely mechanically dense game in a way that almost no other games are. And so I really, really like that aspect of it. I like the narrative. I like the side narrative stuff a lot more than I like the core narrative aspect stuff. Yeah. And I'm still going to go, cause I want to know more about, I want to know more about Nyx. I want to know more about Achilles, you know, so I'm probably going to keep farming for Nectar and Ambrosia just to like get those story bits.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably keep playing it here and there. I mean, for sure, I would love to feel as though I've mastered a build for each weapon.
Yeah.
And at this point, I feel like I'm really just a shield master. So there's a lot more to try out.
I recently unlocked the final thing where I don't even know what it does, but at the end of the game, you can go back into the, you know, Hades private quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another shade in there that is basically what do they even call them? It's like, he's kind of, he is the one that keeps track of Zagreus's new job of like being, it's funny, they even give him like a job description. It's like, as the new security coordinating manager of Hades, your job is to like test the boundaries and try to escape and all that stuff.
You're basically a QA tester for hell.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And so, and then there's a new shade in there that basically allows you to like upgrade the badges on your job. And like the first thing requires 10 keys and 1,000 darkness, which I do not have right now. And it's like, I have no clue what this mechanic even is. It could just be, they make it seem like the mechanic is just for visual sake, but I have no clue. Like maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And so there's just so many of those types of things that make you want to keep playing the game, which in and of itself is excellent, but the metagame is also constantly enticing me with other things. Yeah. You know,
that's wild. I really feel like I should just play at this point for the story and the unlocks, like just abandon the idea of winning or finishing a round, you know, especially because when you die, it's just like, oh, by the way, he did it and he died and then you die.
Well, and there's that whole other mechanic that I still haven't gotten yet. Like Skelly has those other prizes. Did you get those yet?
Yes. Yeah.
So did you unlock one yet? Cause no, I haven't done it yet. Yeah, nope. So the first one that requires you to do a successful run with 8 heat on you, and I have not done that yet. But there's just these like weird things with like a shroud over them that Skelly is like, oh, if you want these, you got to do the heat. And
you got to check this out.
Yeah, what even is that?
Yeah, there's just so much afterwards, too. It's pretty crazy.
There's multiple conversations. I had a conversation with Achilles and Nyx where Zagreus asked, hey, who's Skelly? And they're like, I don't know. I thought he was with you. And it's like, wait, who is he?
That's so funny. Every time I see Skelly, I think of his version in, what is the Hidetaka Miyazaki ninja game?
Wait, did we just talk about Neo? Oh, no. We were talking about we really fell off that game. That is an indictment of that game and probably our sleep deprivation.
Yeah, that's also true. Anyway, there's a skeleton version of him. He's also literally a skeleton. There's one of them in every of these games. So.
There really is, actually. You know what? This is a crazy trope because there's been skeleton guys in Zelda games, too, where it's I'm an old Hyrule warrior or whatever, and you can practice on me. Yeah.
YouTubers, someone out there, make a video where all of these folks are just hanging out in the waiting room, you know, waiting to be called.
And sell it to HBO Max.
Yep.
Well, I think I'll call it there. This game for me is basically taking the place of Binding of Isaac, which is like, I'm just going to go in and play this game every once in a while.
Yeah, nice. I think I'm just going to go back to Spelunky, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now I got to swing back over to Spelunky because I'm further along in Hades than I am in Spelunky for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find all of our podcasts wherever fine podcasts are sold for free: iTunes, Stitcher, Apple. I guess Apple iTunes, same thing. Find us out there.
Pomegranate cast. Nailed it.
All right, I'll be working everyone on my 6-minute run soon, so watch out for that.
I got a tight 5. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.